Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. So have you ever found yourself trying to explain that there's a different way of thinking that might affect the body, and maybe if you have old thought patterns it might disrupt the body, but you really don't know what this is called? There is actually relief. There is a word for this ability of our genes to affect our reality to affect our genes, and it's called epigenetics. Epigenetic medicine. Look, I can't even basically explain what it is, because it's an amazing model of medicine that is to many people known as the future of medicine. Well, this very evening, tonight, on the 29th of May, we're going to be doing an evening event. There's the Epigenetic Medicine Awards Ceremony, and it's tonight. All day, actually, today, and tonight is the ceremony, and then tomorrow are classes and so forth. It's at the LAX Crown Plaza, and it's featuring scientists and leaders in energy medicine and energy psychology, all coming together for workshops, teaching some of the most advanced healing methods available today. It's very cutting-edge information, and tonight there is a special award ceremony honoring the pioneering research in the field of epigenetics. This is, the control of genes from outside the cell. And there's a lavish reception that's happening. And it's the very first annual Epigenetic Medicine Award. And the recipient is Dr. Randy Jertl, who's done some amazing research in his laboratory that I'm going to have him explain. He is a professor of radiation oncology at the Duke University Medical Center. And he's got some groundbreaking research that he's been doing. So he's going to explain some of that to you this evening. And in the meanwhile, joining me is, by the way, you can come to this event tonight. And the people who are putting the event on said that they're going to open the doors at 6:30 for general admission for a donation of your choice. They really want to make sure that everyone can be a part of this inaugural event, this remarkable event. So it's for a donation of your choice, whatever you want to give. They're raising funds for the epigenetic medicine research. And also you can, see here, you can either show up at 6:30. You can call the reservation number for more information, which is 800-550-5571. Or you can go to the website, which is epiaward.com. That's epiaward.com. And then from 7 to 10, Bruce Lipton and Donna Eden are going to be giving the Epigenetic Medicine Award. And joining me on the air is internationally recognized authority on the Bridging the Science and Spirit Together, Dr. Bruce Lipton. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Well, it's really great to be back, Lisa. Thank you.
Back? You've been gone, huh?
Oh, traveling, and it's really great just to see the world as we're going through this major evolutionary shift, and it's very exciting as a biologist to see what's going on in the world and see the changes that are leading to a profound alteration of the way we've been living our lives.
Well, you have done a massive amount of, I should say, epigenetic research on your own with cloning stem cells and all sorts of different things that you've done. What is the award ceremony? Well, first of all, let's back up for a second if people don't understand what epigenetics is, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is a topic that is so profound that it itself it will precipitate a major change in civilization. And it does it for this very particular reason, is that in my book, which is called The Biology of Belief, I really talk about the fact how our thoughts and our perceptions of life control our biology. And through this understanding, you start to recognize that you can change your life as the thoughts or beliefs about life that you perceive are changed, then you can change your life as well. Well, why this becomes interesting is that at some level, how does the thought and belief actually impact the genetic expression of the system? And the reason why that's a question is because, well, since about 300 years or so now, medicine has separated the mind-body duality and said, okay, the body is controlled by genes and the mind doesn't really influence the body. And this is a belief system that is built into what is called the central dogma of conventional medicine and biology. And I just love it because it's actually called the central dogma, which is the fundamental belief upon which all of medicine is structured. And the central dogma has the belief that information in biology flows from the DNA to the RNA and then creates the protein. And why that's relevant is the DNA are the genes, and the proteins are the molecules that give you your traits and your behaviors. So basically it says that the DNA is a blueprint for the behavioral proteins, so that the DNA controls or influences what behaviors that we have. So this whole concept called central dogma is that really emphasizes what we call the primacy of DNA, meaning genes control this and genes control that. So we bought into a belief system for a long time that our behaviors are pretty much controlled by the genes. And in the last 10 years, there's been this tremendous upheaval that culminated with the Human Genome Project that is changing the belief of how things work, because when we believe that genes control our lives, genes are, for example, in our nature, so that we started to emphasize that nature was more important than nurture, because we emphasized that genes were primal and they control our biology, and so we talk about genetic control, which just means control by genes, and that's what we hear about in the on the media or read in the newspapers about a gene that controls this and a gene that controls that. That's the consequence of thinking in terms of genetic control. But after the Human Genome Project, it was turned out that the beliefs about genetic control were flawed, because to have a genetic control biology, we would have to have over 100,000, maybe up to 300,000 genes. And when they did the Human Genome Project, they only found about 23,000 genes, meaning there's just a minuscule amount of genes, not enough to fill out the model of a biology that's controlled by genes.
So what you're saying is that if the genes that we are born with genetically, yes, basically are so few that they do control things like the color of the eyes, color of the hair, those types of things, but
yes,
on a health level, they don't control that?
No, here's what it turns out. The genes are the building blocks that make a body. So during the development from when a sperm meets an egg, you start with just one giant cell, to the next of development, the cells organize and take the shape of an embryo, which goes through these different changes, and ultimately the embryo takes on the shape of a human, and we call that the fetus stage. So when we're talking about a woman conceiving a child, the first phase is called the embryo phase, where a single cell turns into a structure that ultimately looks like a human. When that embryo now actually looks like a human, then we call it the fetus stage. So you say, what's the relevance? And the answer is this. The genes get us from the embryo to the fetus, meaning the genes provide the structure of the vehicle called the body. But from the fetus stage on, the genes take a back seat to the influence of the environment. And this is where environmental influences that the mother is experiencing, which include emotional or nutritional issues or all kinds of issues about concerns of safety, et cetera, these information from the environment can affect the fetus and change its behavior and change its genetics. And so there, it says genes are important to create the vehicle, but how the vehicle is going to be used and the attributes that it's going to express, like is it going to be muscular or is it going to be obese, these are influences that are not so much in the genes, but in the response to the environment.
Hmm.
And so all of a sudden we start to say, wait, we thought genes control the system, and now it turns out, no, it's signals from the environment.
Now, this is what Dr. Jertl has found at with his research. If you could talk a little bit about what he's done with the mice, and the mice weren't harmed. It was just basically pregnant mice and feeding a mother a certain type of diet during pregnancy. How did that work out?
This is, again, our old belief is you got genes for a mutation, then you're going to express the mutation. You got genes for a cancer, you're going to have the cancer. So here's the story that Randy Jertl is working with a mouse that has a mutation that causes the appearance of what is called the agouti appearance. And the agouti appearance is the mouse is very obese. Instead of having the brown fur, it has a light blondish-looking fur. Is that these animals frequently have diabetes and high blood pressure problems, and they die very quickly compared to control. And so this is the gene that causes this, yes. But what Randy Jertl found is by altering the environmental information when this gene is being activated in the development, you can actually change the action of the gene. So basically what he found was that even though the gene was mutated, you can change an environmental response and then cause the mutation not to be expressed. And all of a sudden it says, well, wait a minute. The organism isn't controlled by the genes. The organism is controlled by its response to the environment. And the difference of why this is, so why is this so profound? The answer is, when we bought the belief that genes control our lives, genetic control, we bought into the concept of victim. For the simple reason is, well, you didn't pick your genes, and you can't change your genes, and if your genes provide the character of your life, and you didn't have anything to do with it except have them, then you become a victim of your genes, and that's
right.
What we bought into.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people talk about, well, I got cancer running in my family, cardiovascular disease or diabetes.
Well, let me ask you, I'm sorry, quickly about the, if a mother is pregnant and she gains an exorbitant amount of weight with her pregnancy, does that predispose the child to being big, if you're talking about...
It actually may go either way. It may cause the child to also become obese as part of a pattern program, or it may make it actually respond to the other way, where the child will become anorexic. So it all depends on how the original data is then incorporated with the other life experiences. So it basically says it wasn't genetically programmed, but it was a response to the environment or the individual's perception of the environment that changes the gene. So this new understanding, the old understanding, genetic control, literally means control by genes. The new understanding is called epigenetic control. And what that means is the prefix epi means above, like when you say the word epidermis.
Mm-hmm.
That means the layer above the dermis. So when you say epigenetic control, that says control above the genes. And all of a sudden it says, for all the years that we bought into the fact that genes control our lives, the new understanding from the front edge of genetics is, no, it's the environment and our perception of the environment, which is more or less our nurture aspect, which has more power over the expression of our genes than the genes have over it.
Well, doesn't
and this is really exciting, because what the difference is we go from a time of believing that we are victims of our genes, and then, you know, just give in to the fact, oh, well, cancer's running in my family, and I have an opportunity to get this cancer, and believing it so much that you actually get the cancer, not from having a cancer gene, but having a perception of the environment that includes the cancer, and all of a sudden your perception is shaping your genes, and boom, you got a cancer. So all of a sudden, epigenetic control means control above the genes, which is our perception, and the value is this. Genetic control, victim. But if it's controlled by perception, that means you can change your beliefs or your attitudes or how you see the world. And if you change that, then it will also then change your biology.
But
then all of a sudden, we're not victims, because now we have the ability to go back in and reprogram our biology using epigenetics. To the extent that you can rewrite genes, to the extent that Randy Jertl's research revealed, even if you had a mutated gene, you can rewrite that.
Is this go out above that phrase? I think it's a physics phrase, as above, so below?
It's mathematics as well. It's the fractal image. And so it really reveals that how the cell works and how the human work are exactly the same. So this is why this is a beautiful understanding, because it frees us up from a belief that we are limited by our heredity. And as the Biology of Belief book points out, it says, if that's your belief, then actually you will take your perception of, like, a cancer running your family or diabetes running in the family, and put that into a perception of expectation. And all of a sudden, you didn't have a gene for diabetes or the gene for cancer, but if you have the perception of that, and perception shapes the genetics, then you are contributing to this expression. So all of a sudden it says you have personal ability and responsibility in this case, where you can change the biology of your life with your mind, and all of a sudden realize that it was our mind that was probably causing most of the problems in the first place. And by being able to rewrite this mind, you can rewrite your history of pathology.
And that's something that people have the hardest time expressing, not only saying that that's possible, but believing that that is possible.
Well, this is the problem. When, you know, as we've talked before about in the biology of belief, it says that the patterns that you acquire in your mind, especially your subconscious mind during development, shape those beliefs, which then in turn shape the biology to match the beliefs. So what's interesting is we go back and recognize that when we were all very young and we were born with doctors around us. And even though we were just a neonate infant at that time, we were recording all the stuff that was going on. So we were born with doctors, and every time anything was wrong with us, our parents would get all excited and say, oh, the baby's sick, we have to take the baby to the doctor. And even as we got older, we started to recognize if we had a problem about our health, we'd have to go to the doctor. So we acquired, in our very earliest programming, an understanding that says when you're sick, you have to go to the doctor, and the doctor will heal you. Well, what's interesting is we already have the innate ability to heal ourselves. But once we create a perception that says before you heal yourself, you have to go to the doctor, then we've created a ritual that says if you're sick, until you go to the doctor, you're not going to even engage your ability to heal yourself, because your program said first go to the doctor. And the joke, Lisa, that's really funny is that many people, you know, are programmed to go to the doctor before they can engage their healing, and yet it's many people get well on the way to the doctor. And the reason is this: as soon as they started to follow through the intention that I'm going to the doctor, the innate system said, okay, now that you've already done that, we can do the healing part. So the funny part is that we put a stumbling block in before our healing with our subconscious beliefs that we don't heal ourselves, that doctors do this for us.
Something that you can teach at a very, very early age is that you can heal yourself, and you can also learn that even in later life, that you can heal yourself. It's now talked about a lot in our circles, but people don't even quite understand how to do that. And if you were to say to someone, you can heal yourself, the first place to start with is the cells, is a regeneration of whatever is damaged. So my daughter would, you know, fall. She actually got a burn once on the tailpipe of my husband's car. She walked right into it when he came home. And it was something that she immediately, after she, you know, realized what happened, and we both looked at it, she looked at it and she said, Mommy, don't touch it. I can heal it. I'm like, what are you talking about? Before I even knew that she walked into it, because she was going to the back of the car, my husband had bought me flowers. They were going to surprise me, so they went up to the back of the car to get them. She walked in the tailpipe, runs backwards, like in a backwards motion, and she goes, Mommy, I can heal it. I can heal it myself. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't even know she burned herself. But she healed that in so fast. It was amazing. I mean, it was just the concept of I can heal myself is something that is you can do at infancy. You can teach it at you know, as soon as they can talk, we can learn it as adults and in later years in our life, all sorts of places. But the first place you start is the cell.
Yeah, and it's talking to your cells that it's very interesting, because we look at the body as a single entity. And in truth, the biology of our body is that the living things are cells, and there's about 50 trillion of them, and that these cells are virtually and structurally and behaviorally actually like miniature people. So in a cartoon sense, under your skin is a giant community of 50 trillion citizens, and just like people in a country, the pronouncements from the government influence the actions and what goes on as an organizing factor. So when we have a government that says, well, you can't heal that, then the cells say, oh, okay, well, we can't heal it, and they stop working on it. But in contrast, if the mind of that government that's talking to the cells fully believes in healing and sends the information to the cells will immediately make that response because the cells conform to the signals that come from the mind because the mind is the device that is coordinating the response. So talking to your cells is very important, but then you also have to recognize that we frequently have, unfortunately, beliefs of our limitations and how much healing we can do or how fast we can heal because we're frequently told, like, oh, well, you'll have this for so many days. Or the black humor of part of this is when a terminal patient goes to a doctor and a doctor at least confirms their terminal and then tells them about how long they have left. They don't realize that whatever
it's all getting registered.
They were told,
yes,
the mind will try to conform as close as it can to that date. So the doctor
really
seems, well, the doctors are pretty close to being accurate, mainly because they're in a sense unknowingly predicting which day that's going to happen.
Very interesting. By the way, my guest is Dr. Bruce Lipton, and this is Lisa Gar. You're listening to The Aware Show. Have you ever seen that Woody Allen film where he does this great animation of the body and the stomach and inside the body and so forth? I don't know if you've ever seen this film, but you should one day. You've got to do an animation of cells being miniature people and being governed by the brain. Because part of this, Bruce, and where I'm getting to is that you have such a wonderful way of speaking about this from a cellular level, and I've seen your PowerPoint presentation where we get to see the images, and it makes so much sense when I see it. But talking about it, it can be very confusing to listen to if this is the first time you've ever heard about something
absolutely
like this.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I like the PowerPoint presentation, because if I have several hundred people in the audience and I say, well, imagine what this looks like, and I realize at some point, well, I have 700 people with 700 different images in their imagination that we're not on the same page. So I realized to really make the lecture work is by providing the images that we can all follow. And then once we're all on the same page, it's like, oh, that's how it works. God, that's simple. And I really love it because nature has always been simple, and we as humans always try to make everything very complex. And so when you start to see how simple the system is and also see how powerful you are in controlling the system if you don't have programs acquired from your development
that
took away those powers or sabotaged those powers.
You actually gave us a beautiful book for my daughter when she was born, and it was an animated version. It was a story, right, of the cell. Of this little boy, right?
Yes.
And he was. What was the story called again? I found it at Christmas, and I reread it, and I can't remember now. You can't remember. You've done a lot since then, Bruce.
It's a lot of things going on.
It's a lot of things. Well,
and it's really exciting because this overnight success, meaning in 1985 when I started talking about this. People looked at me like, you know, like some Martian just landed.
Right.
You know? And it's really neat because today I talk about the same stuff, and scientists look at me and go, say, so what are you saying that's new? And it's so exciting because it is now rapidly, the information I talked about till over 20 years ago is now becoming part of the mainstream thought process. And why this is relevant is because having been aware of this for all those years, the exciting part is if you really understand this stuff, and I say this from my personal experience, that you can apply this knowledge and profoundly change your life. And that's the most exciting thing, especially from a guy like myself who got into the sciences because I didn't even believe in that stuff. I fully got into, yes, it's biochemicals and genes and machinery and all that stuff.
You used to teach medical school, right?
To recognize, oh, my God, it's my thoughts and my beliefs and my conscious and unconscious that are actually shaping the biology. And when you have that awareness, then you have an opportunity to go in and change the perceptions that have unconsciously actually taking us off our track.
Now, I just want to mention one more time that there is an award ceremony that's going on this evening. It's the Epigenetic Medicine Award Ceremony, and it is going to be featuring Bruce Lipton, who's going to be speaking. He's my guest right now. And Donna Eden, who we interviewed a couple of days ago. She's talking about energy medicine. And David Feinstein, he's a clinical psychologist, is also the leader in the field of energy psychology, which I'm also studying. Just fascinating people that are going to be at this award ceremony. And so tonight, starting at 6:30, there is a reception. And let's see here. I see five to seven is the reception, is the registration and reception. And you can come anytime between those times. There's a silent auction. There's entertainment. There's a reception. And you can come for a donation of your choice. They really want to make sure that everyone can be a part of this event. Bruce is going to be speaking. I'm going to be emceeing the evening. A lot of great people are going to be talking about how to awaken our perceptions. Basically, we're going to be doing exactly what it is that these wonderful scientists talk about. So you're going to expose yourself to this great epigenetic type of science. If you want to bring people who don't know anything about this, this would be a great introductory way of explaining to them about what this is and have some of the greatest minds around it. Also, Bruce Lipton had the, oh, by the way, it's at the Crown Plaza LAX. And this is this evening and all day tomorrow, but this evening is the award ceremony. The reservation information line is 800-550-5571, or you can go to the website for more information, which is epiaward.com, epiaward.com, or you can just show up at the Crown Plaza LAX, and that's on Century Boulevard at 5985 Century Boulevard. And it's going to be fabulous. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, Bruce, you just got back from, you said 3 months of travel. 3 months?
Just short of 2.5, which was just preceded by 3 months, so it's 5.5 months now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be away.
Back home in Santa Cruz. It's beautiful.
Yeah? A lot has been gone. Where did you go?
I went to Africa.
Africa.
First stop was Egypt, where I did a shamanic journey with a friend of mine, Nikki Scully,
mm-hmm.
who has several books on shamanic journeys in Egypt. I can't believe it. I mean, the opportunity to go to the pyramids, the Sphinx, the big temples before they opened to the public or after they were closed to the public, so that our small group had access to all these magnificent sights, especially the evening was really great, because then they'd light them up and it'd be like these giant light shows, seeing these temples that are massive in structure. I didn't realize how massive they are, like four stories in granite, and it's just like coming out of the desert. It's like totally amazing. And what was really interesting is that to find in every one of these temples that these they're just giant columns of granite, and the walls are all carved with hieroglyphics, and yet what it turns out is every temple is a library. Every one has all kinds of the books are written in the stone as part of the temple walls and of the columns, and it's really exciting to see that they had how to make essential oils and healing medicines, as well as how to do surgery, for example, in some of the temples on health and all this. So the big surprise was that these temples, as well as being a spiritual center, were actually libraries made out of stone. It's great.
And so you found information in there. Did you find anything specifically about cellular biology or anything?
Well, basically, it's the same thing that their gods are energies, and so they're talking about fields and how the fields are influenced by the environment and the galaxies, et cetera, and how these fields shape human behavior. So how, if you know these fields shape human behavior, then you can use your perceptions of these fields to control your life. So which essentially the program tonight on epigenetics is a scientific manifestation of what they had known about 5,000 BC.
So wow.
Wow, we're coming back.
This has been very validating.
This awareness and balance, and it's an important, necessary time, because we've thrown the environment so out of balance right now that the Earth, in a sense, is trying to shake us off its back, because it's trying to return harmony, and we're the ones that have that have unfortunately playing that disharmony. And
so that's an interesting thought.
There's an evolution that's happening right now, and I get very excited about it because it's a biological pattern and a fractal pattern
that
says that the changes that are happening now are profound because it's an evolutionary leap for something called humanity. That we start to recognize that we are all cells in a larger organism. The organism is called humanity with 6.5 billion or 7 billion people in it, and that the human isn't evolving, but the humanity as a multicellular organism is evolving. So while we as individuals may not see physiological changes as an evolution, the community and culture of all humans as one living organism is what's now manifesting itself. So we're becoming more aware, and with that awareness and our relationship to the planet, we have an opportunity to bring back harmony and balance and elevate human life on this planet. So
I've been thinking about this a lot lately. It's interesting that you say this, but that everything in life, I mean in nature, constantly is attempting, its goal is to create balance. Nature's constant goal is to create balance. You see it with the thorn and the roses, or the, you know, you'll see a fruit that's protected by thorns so that it, you know, it can grow. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways in nature that balance is created. And the body does the same thing. It strives, its greatest goal, its innate ability is to heal itself, to restore the body back to homeostasis, back to balance, right? So now,
absolutely, but then our mind gets in the way. So there's an interesting image to make sense of this, and that is if you go into a hospital and there's an unconscious person that's been unconscious for a long time, and they have this person in a hospital bed with all the wires and plugs in, and you're looking at all the data about respiration, heartbeat, blood pressure, all those things. You start to see that they're pretty much running perfectly in balance. But when they come out of their unconscious state, they get conscious awareness again, all of a sudden, all those balance parameters start to get distorted because the mind influences the nature of how the body is running. And so if we're not really trained to not let the mind disrupt the harmony of the system, if we're not trained to do that, then our own disharmony in our mind is really the primary source of our illness. And that's why when the person goes unconscious and the body says, oh, okay, I know how to take care of this, and the body will immediately put everything back in order. But then, again, every time the mind comes back in, it distorts it. And so it's interesting to recognize is that inherently the body is capable of healing itself and maintaining a perfect state of health, but our mind is sort of like a driver and the body is like a vehicle. And some people have good driver education, some people have pretty poor driver education, and so the reality is their bodies, their vehicles, will reflect their driving skills. So it says if you change how you're driving your biology, change how you're using your mind, you can have your body come back into health and harmony again, and all of a sudden you start to see, oh, then I'm not a victim of the circumstances, but I can actually change my perceptions and beliefs and attitudes and rewrite my biology, and all of a sudden this opens up the doorway for that image of a utopian kind of world where if people are allowed to recognize that they can create this for themselves, then all of a sudden the kinds of illnesses and disease and disharmony we find in the world will clear up.
Let's talk about it on a basic level, on an individual level, I should say. What happens when it comes to things like addictions and chemical imbalances, and you get these blood tests back or results back saying, oh, you have a chemical imbalance in your brain, or you have this chemical imbalance in your body? How would you use the information that you talk about to have somebody correct that?
Well, the first thing you look at is the chemical imbalance that they so-called report on. This is a very critical question. Is the issue or symptom because of the chemical imbalance, or is the symptom causing the chemical imbalance? And there's a big difference because if the system is causing the chemical imbalance, then adjusting the system can bring back the harmony without any use of drugs. But if it's the other way around, where the imbalance in the body causes a symptom, then we're destined to take medicine to change that balance. And what's new and exciting in the new field of this understanding about biology is that the imbalances in the body are very rarely associated with our genes or our heredity, that 95% of us actually have bodies that should maintain themselves in perfect harmony and growth and be, you know, healthy through our lives. And if we're not, it's not because of the machine. It's because of our driving, our programs in our subconscious mind especially.
So it's like the chicken or the egg theory there?
I mean,
you think it's the chicken or the egg theory, that it's the mental that involves the chemical before the chemical involves the mental, or they happen simultaneously?
Yeah, very much so. I would say at least 95% of the time.
Really?
That 5% of the time is organic genetic illness, but that's a very small percentage of the entire population, so it's less than 5%.
That in itself, that point right there in itself is a mind bender, because it's a mind opener, I should say. It really is, because people, yes, exactly what you're talking about, fall victims to your chemical imbalances or to your genetics or anything like that, whereas if you look back in life, there probably was some type of emotional event or decision that you made that you decided upon the fact that you were going to have this chemical imbalance, or that you looked at this. I mean, they say that 95% of people who smoke had a mentor who smoked, so they witnessed somebody else doing it. Well, you witnessed somebody in your family having this chemical imbalance or having this disorder or having this biological illness, and it makes an imprint on the mind. I mean, this can go to all sorts of conversations. I mean, look back to...
But that's the whole fundamental reality of the importance of what's going on is, yes, the images of how we perceive life turn out to be programs that by which we control our lives. So as we're growing up, and this is the hard part, because it sounds like, well, some people made a decision to have a chemical imbalance. It's actually most likely no. Most likely the programming occurred before they were even conscious. And so that the programming was a response to what they were experiencing in the environment. The first 5 or 6 years of a child's life is not really based with conscious thinking of the child. It's basically putting programs about life into the system. As I talk about in the lecture, for example, I say, look, you get a new iPod, you open it up out of the box, you take it out of the box, and you push play, and it's like nothing. There's nothing to play. You can't play anything. You have to first put the programs in. Then when you push play, you can create, you program your music. You can play it. So why is it relevant? Well, a child's like that iPod coming out of the birth canal. There are no experiences to use consciousness with, so if you push play consciousness, nothing's going to happen. So the design of the nervous system and during child development is to take the first 5 years and download programs by observing those people around you, your parents primarily and siblings and community. So now all of a sudden you say, well, wait, where do these programs that I just downloaded go? And they go into the subconscious mind. So all of a sudden it says, wait, the programs that are fundamental in your subconscious mind, they're not your programs. They're programs that you got from your parents, your peers, your community, your teachers, whatever it is. And why that is relevant is because we now recognize that 95% of our life is programmed by the subconscious mind, which is mainly programs from other people. And then you say, well, wait a minute. That means if 95% of my life I'm playing beliefs that I got from other people about myself, such as like when you hear parents yell at a child in a store, you don't deserve that, or you're not smart enough, and this child is under six. Those are recordings in the subconscious mind, and then the rest of their lives, 95% of their behavior is going to be coherent with the belief of, I don't deserve that, I'm not smart enough.
Well,
and so 95% of our lives, we're sabotaging ourselves, not with our own beliefs, but with the beliefs that we acquired from
other people
about us.
I was reading this the other day about Freud, and tell me if I got this right or not, but he says the imprint period is from 0 to 2 years old. So what you look at, he was specifically, of course, talking about sexuality, that you can view a male and a female relating. In some way, your brain will imprint between 0 and 2 years old what your sexuality and what your relationship to women and men is in that time period. And this is just one of the readings that I caught on him a long, long time ago. But, I mean, what does that have to do with genetics? I mean, say, for example, you made that decision at that time, not knowing it, but something in your It was a study with twins, and two twins had the same exact upbringing, and one wound up heterosexual, one wound up homosexual, and they were talking about the study and how, from 0 to 2, there was an imprint period that this one particular child could have skewed something that would have made them like their particular sex rather than the opposite sex better. Do you think that that's in any way described in the genes?
Well, it could be very much influencing the genes, but there's so many other parameters to include, especially with twin studies. And one of the interesting things that epigenetics has revealed about twins is this. Well, identical twins are born with essentially the same identical set of genes, that the readout of those genes is modified by their life experiences. So that if you look at identical twins and look at their gene activity when they're first born, they're almost identical. But then, as they progress through their life and their experiences alter their genetics, and then you go back and compare the gene readout between the siblings, you start to see is the older they get, the farther apart the genetic readout is, where they're reading different genes and activating different functions and behaviors and responses, and all of a sudden you start to realize, yeah, they were born genetically identical, but their life experiences were profoundly influencing the subsequent readout of their genes. So it's not, again, as powerful in genetic control as environmental control.
Fascinating. I mean, truly fascinating. So then, okay, so wind up, fast forward 40, 50 years into life, and now you have these belief systems. How would you change them? I mean, maybe you don't like some of them.
Well, this is the critical part, is first identifying that you even have them, because most people actually never really see their own sabotaging and limiting beliefs. As I say in the lecture, example, you know somebody, and you know their parent, and you recognize that your friend shares some of the same behaviors as their parents, and so that you volunteer, you go, Mary, you're just like your mom. And then you back away from Mary. She gets ballistic because she's going to say, how can you say that? Because in her mind, she says, I'm not like my mom. And this is a funny but very profound, important point for this reason. Everyone else can see that Mary behaves like her mom and acknowledges that, she's just like her mom. Mary doesn't see that. And the reason is this, is because she's operating that. She got her programs to behave like her mom by downloading her mom into her subconscious mind. But as the subconscious name implies, when it's operating, you don't see it happening. So Mary's behaving like her mom because she's playing subconscious programs, but her consciousness isn't aware that she's playing those programs and doesn't see it. So when she's told she's like her mom in her behavior, it's a surprise to her. And why is this relevant? The answer is most of our subconscious beliefs play without us observing them. And why is that relevant? And the answer is very clear. Here's the point, that your conscious mind, your thinking mind, your rational mind, has the mind, that's the one that has your desires and your wishes and what you want out of life in it. The subconscious mind has programs, but primarily derived from other people. Now we look at the data and reveal that 95% of our life comes from the subconscious, with only about 5% being controlled by the conscious. And why is that relevant? Because it says about 5% of the time you're controlling your life with your desires and what you want out of life and your wishes. 95% of the time your life is playing programs that are derived from other people, and these programs may or may not support where you want to go. And therefore, if you got a program that sabotages you in your early life, even if you're consciously wishing to make a better improvement in this area, your subconscious is still going to control it 95% of the time. So you will sabotage yourself and not see it. And then why ultimately does this become important? Because if you didn't see that your subconscious beliefs were acting out, and you didn't see that many of them were sabotaging you, then what you see in your mind is, my desire was to be healthy or happy. My desire was to be in love, or my desire was to have more money, and it's not forthcoming. And then you have to say, well, gosh, the universe isn't my friend. And the problem is, no, it wasn't the universe that was the problem. The problem was your subconscious mind was programmed with conflicting beliefs, and since it controls your life 95% of the time, it will generally negate your conscious wants and wishes out of life until you rewrite those subconscious programs.
That's why I have found so much success with working with the subconscious mind through conversational hypnosis and through those types of things, because it really does make lasting, effective change with certain phraseology and terminology and so forth, and doing visualization, all of those types of things in a hypnotic state works so well because it bypasses the conscious and goes right into the conscious mind. And when I have done that effectively is when I've made the most effective change in my life.
Absolutely. And that is the key. And why are we talking about this? In the end, it's really important. It says when we become aware of this, and we become aware that we have these invisible behaviors, but as you said, we can use a variety of new energy psychology, energy medicine modalities to rewrite these beliefs subconsciously, hypnosis, whatever way, then all of a sudden, then we're not victims. We become able to author a script for our lives. And the part, as you found out, and the part that surprises me all the time since I found out, is, my goodness, once we go back and change some of those beliefs, our lives change almost automatically without any effort. And the reason is because subconscious mind doesn't need you to have any effort. As long as it's got the program in it, it's going to play anyway.
Right,
so,
yeah.
That's the exciting part, that these things really work.
Yeah, they do. And if you find out there's, you know, energy pathways in the body, and there's ways that you can assist your subconscious mind to changing with meridians and subtle energy shifts and so forth, and that's some of the stuff they're going to be talking about tonight and tomorrow. Donna Eden and David Feinstein are a great pair for talking about things like that, because you can really understand how energy crosses over into to shifting the subconscious mind, and there's pathways in the body that you can actually make those shifts. It's fascinating. The right, the left side of the body, all that stuff. I've really enjoyed learning, and I'm so glad that you're helping us bring it to the forefront of medicine too, and making it legitimate. Because coming from a cellular biological perspective, as you are, it really kind of brings validity to it in a way, in a way of changing, you know, our lives. And you've gone through this with fetus research, and one of the most profound videos I saw was with the slide that you showed of somebody yelling at a pregnant mom and the baby jumping.
Absolutely, and that's so critical, because we've left out the fact that that there's this fetal stage of development, which is at least half of the developmental period or more, where the fetus is influenced by the environmental information that the mother is responding to. And so therefore, without having known that, we haven't known that attitudes and emotions and issues that women are having while they're carrying that baby are in many times translated into a genetic readout in that fetus, altering its abilities and its attributes.
Wow, that's challenging. I mean, because you go through so much during pregnancy and the emotions and all that stuff, and there's so much of a life adjustment that happens when you are carrying a child. It's interesting that all that registers. Okay, I want to ask you about your trip to Africa.
Oh, wow. Well,
you told us about Egypt.
We went to Zimbabwe, and for me, that it was a wonderful experience, because it is about as primal a piece of planet as you can find, and it has essentially the what is tantamount to the Garden of Eden, where you can walk in the middle and say, this is what it was really like. And what's so surprising, of course, is having grown up in the Western places I've had, where to see those kind of wild animals, I have to go to the zoo, and,
right,
and then you see lions with lions and zebras with zebras, etc. When you go out into the bush out there, all of a sudden you find that, my God, it's like the entire zoo is all there, all the bars are gone, and all the animals are intermingled with each other, and baboons and zebras and elk and all kinds of things are just hanging around next to each other, sharing the same yard, you know. And it's like, wow, I never really saw it that way. So it was really interesting to see how harmonious and how beautiful it is in the planet before we really got into a lot of it and altered that environment. And that was one of the desires, was to see this.
It's also,
I have a chance.
You also see a lot of the survival of the fittest out there, however, because you see the animals that are most camouflaged with their environment are the ones that live the longest and procreate the most and keep the species alive.
The survival of the fittest thing is Yeah, there's something about that, but we've overplayed it so much in our civilization so that if you watch, like, the National Geographic or Discovery show and it's about lions, the lion is killing something about every 5 minutes. You know, they're killing and killing and killing and killing because we expect to see that. That's what lions do. And the surprising part was to be in the field and see the lions lying down in the field with all the other animals walking around knowing that they're there.
They sleep 22 hours a day or something like that,
well,
don't they?
Well, most of the time after they eat, they hang out and sleep, you
right.
know? So it's like, that's a lousy TV show. It's like, okay, here's the story of lions, and you see this kill, and then for the next 20 minutes, the lion's sleeping. I guess, you know, you're not going to sell a lot of animals.
20 hours, I guess. That's what they're doing. That's true. They're the fiercest, I guess that's why they call them the king of the jungle, but they can kill very fast, and then they just sleep.
Yeah, and play with each other, you know, so it's like a bunch of big cats playing. So,
right.
Well, that's kind of fun, but it doesn't really hold the viewer who is really so brainwashed with a belief system about survival of the fittest that we've taken that belief and not just look at animals doing it in the jungle, but apply it to us in our own cities, in our own lives. Where, like, we better get out there because somebody's going to try and kill us. So we're in this rat race based on a belief that's actually not true. And it's so nice to go back to that foundational primal space and see, look, there's a lion and there's a bunch of zebras. And that lion, if it wanted to, could get one of those zebras, but everybody's hanging out.
I know. So, we just went to my daughter, who's an animal fan. I mean, just loves them. We went to the wild animal park not so long ago. It was kind of cool to show her the animals that are not in the cages because she has this big thing that she wants animals to run free. All
yeah.
of them need to run free. And they are kind of doing that in their natural environment there. However, most of those animals were raised in captivity. So, you know, a lot of, I don't know if that was reality, but it was neat to see.
Well, it was surprising to be into the bush out, let's say, in Zimbabwe where we were, and recognize that the animals saw us there, and most of them didn't, you know, kept a distance, but they didn't, like, run all the time. So that it was really pretty interesting is that there's not this inherent fear all the time that a human is like a killing thing as well, although, unfortunately, we've programmed a lot of that into the environment. And so, but you can still go out there in the fields and walk among these animals where they won't run away.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean,
yeah.
What a great experience you had. And I love how you're taking all of the wonderful research and the work that you've done and going out into the world and having experiences where you can either see this replicating in nature or learn new things and not just stay in the laboratory and all the lectures that you do, because there's a lot. But we will see you tomorrow night. So the first time that the first time you've probably been on stage for a little while because you've been traveling, right?
Well, you know, I guess you can say mini stage when I was in New Zealand. That's where I was giving lectures at a university. But for the last month and a half, that's certainly first time actually in at least 10 or 12 years that I went someplace without my computer. So I'm still
good
like
for you.
Surprised that I did that.
Well, I'm very proud of you for doing that. It's refreshing, isn't it?
Oh, it was so good to be out there in the world without any sounds of anything human around and just be there. Among the wild animals, it was a fabulous experience.
I agree with you, and I would love to do that myself sometime. But I unhook all the time. People know because I have a hard time getting a hold of me. Oh well. Anyway, so tonight, right now going on, Donna Eden is speaking right now with the Energy Medicine from until 4, and then. This evening, there's going to be a nice reception, a silent auction, entertainment from 5 to 7. All are welcome. This is not just exclusive to the medical community. This is definitely for people to understand and learn as much as they can about epigenetic medicine, about the effect on the genes, about our effect, our perception, and so forth, how it affects our genes. And they have... open this up for general admission for a donation of your choice. They really want to make sure that everyone can be a part of this event. So it's tonight at the Crown Plaza LAX. I will be there emceeing the event. Bruce Lipton's going to be doing a wonderful lecture. You'll get to see some of what he's talking about in person. It's at the Crown Plaza LAX, and the phone number to call again is 800-550-5571 if you're driving and you want to find more information about this, Or you can, if you want to be spontaneous, just go right to the Crown Plaza LAX. Or if you want to reach the website, it's epiaward.com, which is EPIAWARD.com. And I look forward to seeing everyone there. And the following day, Friday, is also an all-day. I don't have the agenda here in front of me for some reason. I just have Thursdays. But it's also an all-day event where what's going on Friday, the 30th? I'll find it in just a second.
Well, there's a variety of new modalities being reviewed, like EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, and TAPIS techniques, different techniques to show how different modalities can change beliefs and perceptions, which then virtually immediately rewrite the behavior of the biology. So very profoundly important for healings or changing your life is understanding how to reprogram these beliefs. And energy psychology is a whole vast field of different techniques to do that.
And also, at the end of the evening, there's going to be a great question and answer period at 4:45. All the presenters are going to be there, from energized psychology specialists and this emotional freedom technique, which is amazing. All sorts of people that are going to be working with energy and talking to you about this and why it's important, and it's going to be a great thing to do too. So you can train yourself in this. You can learn tools for everyday life. If you're a practitioner, this is great for you to use in your practice. It's taught by masters in the field that are coming together for this event. So a really excellent opportunity. So for that, you can also go to epiaward.com for the tickets, EPIAWARD.com. Thank you so much, Bruce Lipton, for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to learn what you have to share with the world. It's just always refreshing, and I love hearing it from you.
I so thank you again for this opportunity, because it's like just to let people know that although things look kind of dark, new information like this evolution from genetics to epigenetics are the foundations of changing our civilization, and we're in that process, so that there's some very exciting times ahead.
Great. Good to hear from you. All right, take care, and I'll see you this evening.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. That was Dr. Bruce Lipton, cellular biologist, and this is Lisa Garr. You've been listening to The Aware Show on KPFK. And until next time, I invite you to stay aware.